Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, October 23rd, 2015. And on today's podcast, we're going to take a thumbnail look into the mind of Russia, much as we did last week with the nation of Israel. Why will it be necessary for us to go back 800 years and start this discussion? Well, we go back a few years and began with the conquest of much of Eurasia, including Russia, by the Mongol Empire, or the Empire of the Great Khan. The Mongol Empire lasted from 1206 to 1405, or about 200 years. It was forged from military conquest, as empires were in that day, forged with the sword and the spear. It was forged by conquering several regional rivals. 200 years in Russia, that's a long time, folks. 200 years of occupation is enough time to completely change a culture, to completely change the DNA of the conquered people. And so the Russian people today still carry the DNA of Mongol warriors pumping through their bloodstreams even today after 800 years. 400 years later, the French army of Napoleon Bonaparte invaded Russia on June 24, 1812. The Russians refer to it as the Patriotic War of 1812. Napoleon's Grand Army numbered 680,000 men and was able to drive all the way and to actually enter Moscow itself. But the Russians burned much of the city and left the French army starving and freezing to death in the Russian winter. Only about 27,000 French soldiers actually returned to France alive. Napoleon had to flee ahead of his retreating troops to protect his empire from pursuing Russians, but he did lead his army into Russia, unlike the invader some 228 years later, the Great Patriotic War, the Russians call it. It's no coincidence that Adolf Hitler also chose June to launch his invasion of Russia. June is about the last month it would be possible to do so. The snows of winter have melted, and the snows of the following winter have not yet begun. So the invaders chase the summer months into Russia, hoping they can get to Moscow ahead of the winter. If they meet only light resistance, maybe it's possible. So the German army invaded Russia in June of 1940. In September, it started snowing in Russia, and the outcome from then on was a foregone conclusion. Resistance from the Russian army was a lot more than light. In the relatively brief time that the German army was in Russia, some of the greatest battles in the history of man's time on earth were fought at Kursk. On the plains of Ukraine and Russia, 3,000 tanks fought along a 300-mile front in the largest armored battle ever. The Battle of Stalingrad raged for 3 years and took 900,000 lives. Unlike Bonaparte, as I said, Adolf Hitler did not enter Russia at the head of his army, and he did not endure the Russian winter when his generals asked for permission to retreat in order to avoid annihilation. He refused their request. Only a tiny handful ever made it back to Germany alive. This time, the Russians did not stop the chasing the pursuing Germans until they had rolled all the way up Berlin and much of Europe. So the Russian people, the Russian army, the Russian government has a history of punishing its invaders and its challengers. The point of this introduction is that the Russian people also have a history of misery, of suffering, of hardship. And after more than 1,000 years, they are still there. Not only that, but they have always made their oppressors pay a very dear price. They have valid reasons for allowing strong autocratic rulers to lead them. Security is very important to the Russian people. Their history makes them nervous. They're always looking, always wondering who is challenging them. And Russia has no Thomas Jeffersons and no James Madisons in its background. The end of the 19th century brought an end to the feudalistic system that Russians lived under for hundreds of years. the beginning of the Soviet nightmare. Let's take a look at some of the things the Russian people have endured during the 20th century, courtesy of scientist and historian Zbigniew Brzezinski. Quote, the Russian-Japanese War of 1905, ending in Russia's humiliating defeat. The Proletarian Revolution of 1905, with widespread urban violence. World War I from 1914 to 1917, with millions of casualties and economic deprivation. The Civil War of 1918 to 21, causing the deaths of millions and much devastation. The Russo-Polish War of 1919 to 1920, resulting in Russian defeat. The launching of the Gulag in the early 1920s, including the murder of much of pre-revolutionary ruling elite and the educated class of Russia. The collectivization of the early 1930s, which caused massive famine and millions of deaths, the Great Purges, and the terror of the mid-1930s with millions sent to slave labor camps and millions of dead. World War II from 1940 to 45 with multiple millions of dead and economic devastation. The re-imposition of the Stalinist terror in the 1940s with arrests and executions. The 40-year-long arms race with the United States from the 1940s to the late 1980s with its impoverishing effects, the economically exhausting effects of trying to protect Soviet power around the globe, the debilitating war in Afghanistan from 1979 to 1989, the sudden breakup of the Soviet Union followed by civil disorder, economic privation, and a bloody war in Chechnya, end quote. Russia's political and geographical boundaries were also drastically altered by the breakup of the Soviet Union. All of a sudden, Russia wasn't a great nation anymore. Nations of the Warsaw Pact were gravitating toward the West and toward NATO. The loss of Ukraine, in particular, was pivotal because of its rich food and industrial capacity and its 52 million people. It also involved losing Russia's only Black Sea port in the Crimea. The breakup also precipitated a social crisis. 75 years of communist rule inflicted unprecedented damage on the Russian people, even on the land and the environment. A very high percentage of the most gifted people were killed in purges. According to official Russian statistics, by the mid-1990s, only about 40% of newborn babies were born healthy. One-fifth of Russian first graders suffered from mental retardation. Male life expectancy declined to 57.3 years, and more Russians were dying than were being born. Russia was suddenly a mid-level third-world country. No one in Russia except the power elite was able to lead anything close to a normal life. The vast majority were hopeless alcoholics. Post-breakup Russia was led by notorious alcoholic Boris Yeltsin, who was reportedly manipulated, maneuvered, bought off by President Clinton. Is there any wonder then that the Russian people were ready to accept a strong leader like Vladimir Putin, who set out to restore lost pride, dignity, and to restore Russia's reputation and the people's self-respect? Mr. Putin has made a strategic gamble to risk what's left of the Russian economy for the chance to make Russia appear as great again. He was present and presented the opportunity on a platter by a weak, bumbling American president, a succession of American presidents, starting with Bill Clinton and culminating with Barack Hussein Obama, have either deliberately or negligently missed chance after chance to reach a strategic deal with Russia that was actually lived up to, that is. Economic sanctions applied because of Ukraine and Crimea has taken Russian economy to the brink. It is estimated that foreign reserves of cash will be exhausted in Russia by next year. Russian oil giants Gazprom and Rosneft, tens of billions of dollars in debt due to the crashing price of oil. Gas and oil represent more than one half of the Russian economy. Russian GDP is projected at $1.2 trillion this year and shrinking. By comparison, the GDP of Texas is $1.4 trillion. All that is why I say Putin's moves in Syria and his devoting 5% of the GDP of Russia to military modernization and expansion is a gamble for him. If he can't get oil prices back up, and soon, Russia, economically speaking, appears doomed. Perhaps his incursion in Syria is intended to pressure and embarrass the United States and Saudi Arabia into raising oil prices. Time will tell, but rumor has it that Russia is about to default on its Western debt. Sanctions prevent Russia from selling all its oil, and certainly at a fair price, and from borrowing from Western banks. So Russia may stop paying the Western banks as well, which would be a challenge to the dollar-denominated system worldwide. There are reasons, folks, finally, reasons, historical reasons, for what Russians do if we just take the time to look for them. At least that's the way I see it, folks. Until next time, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.